Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanz in Washington, working on this program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Thursday, February 17, 2022. Some South Sudanese react to the delay in graduating the unified forces for the country.
We are going now to sit with the proposal that has been advanced by the Sudan, to sit over it and then conclude within 7 days.
And authorities in South Sudan's northern Bahr al-Ghazal state call for peace.
And this one has been going on successfully. This year they came on 15th of January, and they are now in our places.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Civil society activists and some residents in South Sudan's capital have welcomed a decision by South Sudan's presidency to graduate at least 50,000 unified forces in a week's time. Viola Elias has the story for VOA from Juba.
The decision to graduate 50,000 forces follows a meeting in Juba on Wednesday chaired by President Salva Kiir and attended by all vice presidents, the defense minister, and top military generals of the parties to the peace agreement. Cabinet Affairs Minister Martin Elia Lumoro says during the meeting, President Kiir ordered the Joint Defense Board, the body charged with unifying forces of the various parties, to revisit some cantonment sites, especially in Masnabira of Wao in western Bahr al-Ghazal state, to verify the number of forces before they graduate over the next few days. Lomoro says the meeting's participants agreed to give parties to the peace deal 7 days to conclude the representation of opposition forces in the command of the army.
We are going now to sit with the proposal that has been advanced by the Sudan, to sit over it, and then conclude within 7 days so that these forces are graduated. I think this is a very big development, and we are happy that the comments, particularly from the IO leader, Dr. Yamachar, with regards to the report, was very positive. His only concern is for us to agree finally on exactly how to share the command of the top command of the army, and not necessarily the command structure.
Civil society activist Rajab Mohandis, a signatory to the peace deal and former member of the reconstituted Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, points out that graduating the unified forces is the key aspect of the transitional security arrangements is spelled out in the peace deal. But Mohandis questions whether the decision to graduate the forces will meet the primary objective of creating a disciplined and professional army.
We're just going to have so many of the different militias pulled together, and then having them affiliated to their parties is a recipe for another disaster. The process should have been taken in a manner that helps to create the national army required out of these various forces. Unfortunately, this has not been adequately realized.
Another Juba-based civil society activist, Edmond Yakani, is embracing the decision to graduate the unified forces, saying it is better late than never. Yakani says he also thinks it is a good idea to revisit the cantonment sites before their graduation to avoid inconveniences whereby some civilians graduate with the army.
The decision that JDB and JTCS should go back and do a new screening to confirm the 50,000 is very important, because otherwise civilians may find themselves graduated in uniform if we don't have proper track down of who exactly are we graduating, because most of the soldiers, as we follow for the last 2 years, even including Minister of Defense, have said most of the soldiers have deserted the training site. Otherwise, we shall find 50,000 civilians being graduated.
Juba resident Rich Malwal says this move to graduate the integrated forces is a requirement of the peace agreement. Malwal says if security arrangements are carried out, the peace agreement can be a success.
This is the beginning that the people of South Sudan will be able to know that we now have one army, one national army, of which we all know in 2016 what brought the second phase of civil war. It's because we did not have one army. We had parallel armies which were not peaceful with each other. And so It's a new beginning, and it's giving us a new hope as citizens of South Sudan.
Under the 2018 revitalized peace deal, South Sudan was supposed to train and graduate 83,000 unified personnel to take charge of security during the ongoing transitional period. The troops are comprised of police officers, army soldiers, intelligence officers, and members of the prison service. The transitional unity government formed in February 2020 has cited financial constraints for the delay in the graduation of the unified forces. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
Authorities in Awil, North County of South Sudan's northern Bahr al-Ghazal state, are urging area residents to share water points, grazing land and other resources with nomads from neighboring Sudan who have migrated into the area. The cattle keepers arrived in Awil north from Sudan's East Darfur. Dengai Deng has the story for VOA from Bor.
Awil North County Commissioner Victorino Kenakon says hundreds of Rizaigad tribesmen from neighboring Sudan have arrived in the area with their cattle over the past month. Akon says the nomads have settled in several villages, including Jach, Kiradam, Mayomanguk, Jorbioch, Mangung Dengdit, and Kirpal. Akon says he recently issued a local order asking residents to grant Sudanese nomads access to basic services such as health services, water points, and grazing land.
On their side, they don't have water, they don't have enough grass for their animals. So during dry season, from 15th of January onward up to June of every year, they used to come and graze in our land. And this one has been going on successfully. This year they came. They came on 15th of January, and they are now in our places. We are grazing well, and we are taking care of them.
Commissioner Akon urges Awil North County residents to live in peace and harmony with Sudanese nomads who have crossed into their territories seeking pasture and water for their animals. Akon says security measures have been put in place to deter bandits who could create problems by stealing cattle.
Peace is very important. So Sudan is our neighbor, and we have to stay side by side. So peace is very important. So if Rizaigad are here, they have to be protected. They have right to be protected. They have right also to benefit from the few resources we have until they go back to their own places later. Same thing also, we have conveyed the same information to them that if our people moved from the south to the north, so they need also to be protected. The same thing we are doing to their own citizens. So I'm conveying the information to the whole Abawil North and Northern Bahr al-Ghazal alike.
Majung Dengbol, Secretary General of the Joint Border Peace Committee, says the Rizaigads are occupying the western parts of county and enjoy cordial relations with the locals. He says the presence of the nomads is a sign that they trust the people of Awil North County to be peaceful.
The cattle herders from South Sudan came, and some of them are even here with me in my home in Gok Machar. They came recently, and they have 2 days now, and more are still coming. There are many people. They came with their families, and their coming is a sign of peace.
Al-Hadi Abdullah, a representative of the Rizaigad's nomads, confirmed that cattle keepers and their families came to Awil North County from Sudan East Darfur State in search of grazing land and water.
We are thankful to God and happy about the reception extended to us by our brothers from Dinka Malwal. The cattle herders in the East Darfur have arrived in northern Bahr al-Ghazal with our cattle and goats, and we hope to stay here in peace with our brothers.
Last month, authorities in northern Bahr al-Ghazal state closed the western border with Sudan indefinitely after a group of horse-riding Masiria tribesmen from the neighboring Sudanese border town of Mairef attacked and killed 15 and injured scores of others. The attack left thousands of residents displaced in Awil East counties in Pabul area. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
A report by the United Nations mission in South Sudan says violence against civilians has dropped by 42% in 2021 compared to the previous year. The UNMISS Human Rights Division says it documented thousands of cases of civilians subjected to killing, injury, abduction, and conflict-related sexual violence in 2021. Winnie Chirino has the story for VOA from Juba.
Musa Yorosama is the director of the Human Rights Division for the United Nations Mission in South Sudan and representative of the High Commissioner for Human Rights in South Sudan. Sama says UNMISS analyzed all types of violence affecting communities every year since the beginning of the conflict in 2013, and that last year the rate of violence against civilians had dropped a bit.
We assessed the major forms of individual harm experienced across South Sudan. And this includes killing, injury, abduction, and conflict-related sexual violence, and how it impacts, civilians. In 2021, we observed a decrease of 42% in the number of victims compared to 2020, because in 2020, we recorded 5,850 affected civilians or victims. Whereas this year, we recorded 3,414 civilians affected. Now, this decrease shows that some actions have yielded results. There is some form of dividends in terms of reducing violence and human rights violations and abuses across the country.
Sama says the reduction in human rights abuses was due in large part to frequent community interactions as well as engagements by the government and the international community.
Quite a lot of factors could explain the decrease in the number of cases of human rights violations or abuses across the year. One perhaps is the mission's posture in addressing localized violence or subnational violence, using its force, police, and civilian components, as well as the good offices of the SRT, the Special Representative of the Secretary General. And also the One UN approach to addressing concerns and the conflict. This brings into account all the various UN agencies and as well as the mission and other stakeholders. Working with the humanitarian agencies and also the overall international actors operating in South Sudan.
Sama says Warrap State had the highest number of civilian casualties with 24%, followed by Western Equatoria with 19%, then Jonglei State and the Greater Pibor Administrative Area with 17%. He says UNMISS also documented a surge in violence in Tambora of Western Equatoria State between ethnic militias who were allegedly affiliated with conventional parties to the conflict. He says cases of human rights violations had fallen a bit in Jonglei State after recording a high number of cases there a year before, but he says violence in Jonglei remains a concern.
And also, there was some period where we observed some reduction in violence in the Jonglei area, which used to be the highest number, where we used to record the highest number of violence. But again, now we've observed again a spike in violence in Jonglei. And this is a major concern for us. And the civilians continue to bear the brunt of the violence taking place right now in Jonglei. So despite the short reduction in violence in Jonglei at the beginning of the year, the current situation might change the narrative.
Sama says the UN will continue to enhance its structures and coordinate to provide support to national and state-level actors who are working to reduce violence in the country, adding UNMISS will continue to advocate for the Commission for Reconciliation and Healing, but he says the government must do more.
Would expect for the government to investigate these allegations of human rights violations and abuses and address impunity through the justice system. And I think this is key for the government if we could they could do this, because this will definitely address some of the insecurity and the local grievances. Also for the armed elements, for them, they need to stop targeting civilians.
Sama says the UN is concerned that South Sudan's justice system is still weak and ineffective in many parts of the country. He says the UN has provided mobile courts to address the issues of impunity across the country, and the government should follow suit. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, Somalia's insecurity continues without any solutions. Find out why after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is most special about you?
I don't like disappointing people because of my actions. The way it pained me when somebody has disappointed me, I think about the same pain that I will cause to someone whom I have disappointed.
I'm someone who is very friendly, and I can interact with different people without considering their conditions and their status.
One thing special about me, I love the way God has created me, and I love being myself. I don't need to disguise myself like somebody, or I don't need to put myself, pretend like someone. I appreciate the way God has created me.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Somali militant group Al-Shabaab has claimed responsibility for overnight attacks on police and checkpoints that left at least 5 people dead, including 3 soldiers and 16 wounded in the capital area. Mohammed Sheikh Nur reports from Mogadishu.
In a televised news conference Wednesday, police spokesman Abdi Fitah Adan Hassan said the militants used 2 explosive-laden vehicles to carry out the attack. He said explosions, an attack is carried out by the militants, have killed at least 5 people, most notably 2 young girls and 3 soldiers. May Allah have mercy on them, he said, noting 16 others were also wounded. According to the Ministry of Internal Security, the assailants targeted government installations on the outskirts of Mogadishu, including the Kahda District Police Station. Sources say other areas that came under attack include Dar es Salaam and Eilasha settlements, both located outside the capital, and a military outpost in the area. Residents in Kahda confirmed that the attacks began with loud explosions, which were followed by an intense exchange of gunfire. One resident told me he was extremely terrified by the explosions and the armed confrontation between government troops and the attackers. Militant group Al-Shabaab claimed responsibility for the bombings and subsequent gunfight, saying the first blast was a suicide bombing that targeted a military base in the Kahda district before their foot soldiers launched a follow-up attack. According to Radio Andalus, a broadcaster that supports the militants, Al-Shabaab seized military equipment and vehicles after briefly overrunning the military base. The government has denied the claim, saying its forces repulsed the attackers. The Kahda District Police Station suffered the heaviest damages, and most buildings were destroyed. The latest terror attack comes as parliamentary elections take place in many parts of Somalia, including Mogadishu. Al-Shabaab has threatened to disrupt the much-delayed elections, which political leaders are trying to complete by February 25th deadline. Mohamed Sheikh Nur for VOA News, Mogadishu.
Rights group Amnesty International says have committed war crimes and possible crimes against humanity as they were withdrawing from Ethiopia's Amhara region. Gelmo Dawit reports from Addis Ababa.
Amnesty International's report released Wednesday says fighters affiliated with the Tigray People's Liberation Front TPLF killed escorts of Ethiopian civilians in northern Amhara region, looted property, and gang-raped women and girls as young as 14 years. Amnesty said the Tigrayan forces committed the atrocities around Chenna and Kobo last August and September after taking control of the areas. The rights group says interviews with survivors indicate the Tigrayan forces were acting in revenge against Amhara militia that were fighting alongside Ethiopian federal troops to push them back. Sari Jackson is Amnesty's deputy regional director for East Africa, the Horn of Africa, and the Great Lakes. In a press release on the report, she said evidence was mounting of a pattern of Tigrayan forces committing war crimes and possible crimes against humanity in areas that were under their control. Jackson called on the TPLF leadership to put an immediate end to the atrocities and remove from its forces anyone suspected of war crimes. The TPLF did not immediately respond to the allegations, but previously denied Tigrayan forces target civilians. The Amnesty report appears to support a December Human Rights Watch report that said Tigrayan forces executed scores of civilians in Hamara in late August and early September. Amnesty and Human Rights Watch released a joint December report that accused Amhara security forces of killing ethnic Tigrayans in Western Tigray region. Throughout Ethiopia's 14-month war, rights groups have accused both sides of gross rights abuse and war crimes, including raping and killing civilians. Amnesty called on international community to investigate crimes committed by both sides and try to bring those responsible to justice. Gal Mudait for VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
The East African community may miss on the 2024 deadline to fully implement monetary union. A new audit report shows the delay is as a result of lengthy process of decision-making in the community. Moses Javierimana reports from Arusha.
The protocol for the establishment of the East African Monetary Union was signed by the East African Community Heads of State in November 2013 and entered into force in 2014. With the aim to promote and maintain monetary and financial stability in the region as member states will be using a single currency. George Odong is a member of the East African Legislative Assembly.
We are supposed to be moving towards the monetary union by 2024. That's the ambition. And we should be having a single currency. But that is not the priority as it is right now for council. And it's embarrassing that we are in this situation. It's already 2022 and we are left with 2 years and we are not moving. There is no positive traction in the direction of achieving our pillar of single currency and monetary union.
The Audit Commission revealed that 4 Monetary Union Institution bills are still pending, 2 bills are yet to be assented by the heads of state, and 2 other bills being reviewed by the Sectoral Council on Legal and Judicial Affairs. Ezekiel Nibigira is the Burundi Minister for the East African Community Affairs.
Remember that in this report, they have highlighted that even the recommendations of the council are not implemented. So this means that we are going to join our hands together so that the recommendations that are made may be implemented.
The report indicated that 35 bills are yet to be assented to. The current East African Legislative Assembly, since being sworn in 2017, have passed 18 bills, but 3 had been assented to by the heads of state. Martin Ngoga is the Speaker of the Regional Assembly.
The commitment of the ministers. We are only advocating for the change of the ways we do business. Let us change the way we have been doing business. Let us do it differently for the betterment of our community. The commitment is there, but let us activate it into the actionable way of more better delivery than we have done before.
James Kakoza, a lawmaker from Uganda, says that the delay in the implementation of the Monetary Union Protocol is due to the delay of the Council of Ministers.
We are waiting for the legislation. It's not yet in place. There is no way you start a monetary union when there is no legal framework to do that. But otherwise, we as an EAC Parliament, we are ready. We are waiting for that. Because the technocrats from the National Council of Ministers, which will depend on to bring those bills and we pass them. And I don't think we can start to implement that without a legal framework.
To attain and maintain macroeconomic convergence, the protocol of the Monetary Union provides a set of primary and secondary performance convergence criteria to be met by 2021 to enable the introduction of a single currency in the region. Moses Javierimana, VOA Africa, Arusha, Tanzania.
This is a message
in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA Health Correspondent Linor Mudu. The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
That's all we prepared for you this Thursday. We now end the show with some traditional Acholi song. Listening to some traditional Acholi song. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.